So now I've brought up the slide in this lecture that is the abstract of what is in this lecture. Now this lecture is in fact larger than just what I'm going to give today. I'm only going to give the first part, and Jeffrey will continue with the second part when he comes on Thursday. But in this lecture we are going to introduce the field of computational science and talk about what are the technology advances and trends that are driving this field in new directions. So a lot of the, we'll discuss in those technology advances a little bit about low-level hardware, but also about primarily about distributed and parallel computing, how that contributes to the advance of computational power. Also compare this with what is called internetics. This is a new word that has been coined to describe the kinds of computational technologies that are used, particularly on the web, for distributed kinds of applications as well. So we'll make this comparison between the kinds of distributed and parallel computing that you use for scientific computing with other information-based computing. This talk will also have in it, we'll get to some of that today, an overview of what parallel computers are like, what the architecture is like. They are usually distinguished by whether they have distributed, shared, or the combination distributed shared memory. Discuss that today. And then we'll also discuss a little bit about the kinds of software that we'll be using, the growing importance of Java for scientific computations and visualization, in addition to its original use as a web-based language, and primarily the software that we'll be using, which is called Message Passing Interface, or MPI, that is a package used for parallel computing, which you'll be using in this class. And we will also discuss something that's not listed on this slide, which probably should be, which is high-performance Fortran, another kind of software model for doing this kind of computing. So first we'll start with a discussion of what is this field called computational science. And basically it's the use of what you might call high performance computing or leading edge computer technologies to address real world applications. And this field was started by people who were addressing primarily the scientific application side of things. Say five or six, more than that now, 7 or 8 years ago, Jeffrey Fox was in fact one of the first people to see the need for such a field, because the advances in computing power made the use of computation in science much more important. At that time, Jeffrey Fox was at Caltech in California, and working then, as he does now, with a lot of government labs, and saw the importance of computing in what the government researchers were doing, so that people in physics and mechanical engineering were using computing in very significant ways in their work. Without necessarily knowing enough about computer science techniques to really make that pay off. On the other hand, there were many computer scientists who didn't know enough about the application areas to be able to contribute the computer science ideas. So the idea behind computational science is to try to train people so that they, if their primary field is science, they know enough about computing techniques to use it in their work, and vice versa, if your primary field is computer science, to know enough about scientific applications to make a contribution in computing techniques for those applications. So on the scientific side, this led to primarily the use of supercomputers and parallel computing in solving some of these problems. So on the left-hand side of the slide down at the bottom, it characterizes these as large-scale parallel computing, also characterizes it as low latency, closely coupled components. This is because you have, in parallel computing, essentially you're thinking of one computer as a collection of CPUs which are working on the same problem in a closely coupled fashion, where they if they have to exchange data, it has to be very fast. You need this low latency communication. So in yellow on this left hand of the slide are listed some of the topics that come up in the study of this area, what we call now call at Syracuse the simulation track of computational science. And that is parallel algorithms, languages such as Fortran 90, HPF, and MPI that I mentioned, interconnection networks, and topics such as those. More recently, since the World Wide Web has gotten very popular, we have added to our computational science offerings what we call the information track at Syracuse, and that's listed on the right-hand side. We have several courses that talk about the use of computing technology to solve problems that arise in more commercial-oriented applications or applications which are based on information in the World Wide Web. So you can see that the kinds of topics that are discussed there are things like transactions, security, compression of data, multimedia. Some languages are listed there as well. But also in the middle between these two areas, we've listed a collection of topics which arise on both sides. The language Java, for example, VRML, which stands for Virtual Reality Modeling Language, which can give describe three-dimensional scenes. Collaboration software, so that people working in a group can talk to each other over wide distances. The integration of various modules of software, metacomputing, CORBA, which is the standard for object-oriented distributed computing, and of course, very widespread is the use of databases in both sides of this kind of computing. So these are the kinds of topics that are discussed in these courses, and the course that you are taking now corresponds at Syracuse to the course called CPS 615 on the left there, the course which discusses computing techniques and scientific applications. Okay, I have a question on the chat, which is to say again, what is VRML? It stands for Virtual Reality Modeling Language, I believe. And it is a computer graphics language for describing three-dimensional scenes so that you can use that in various kinds of visualizations. Now on the next page, we also discuss on the left parallel computing that is used for primarily for, this is a kind of a simplistic view, but primarily for the scientific kind of computing that we talked about on the previous slide on the left. And on the right, the distributed computing model that you find more on the World Wide Web information kinds of applications. And the point that's being made here is that both of these lead to forms of large-scale computation. On the left, when you have a parallel computer, you're thinking of the computer as one entity, which is solving a problem, but it's made up of some number of CPUs. And this may actually be a fairly large number of CPUs. And so you're going to break up the problem into pieces so that each CPU can work on a different part of the problem at the same time, and this is sort of the essence of parallel computing. So the fact that you can use many CPUs to solve one problem is what gives scales up and gives you the large high-performance computing in this kind of an application. On the right, the kinds of problems that we have are being computed by many people across a large network, such as on the World Wide Web. And here, the kinds of applications that we're doing are then distributed as various parts of it can be, are computed by different people in different places. And the way that we get large power is that we have lots of people using lots of computers. And it's another view of a distributed computing view of getting lots of performance. Now listed down at the bottom there are some names of languages. HPF is the name of a language. It stands for High Performance Fortran, and it's based, it's a Fortran extension in which you can put data into arrays and have it be computed in parallel. And MPI is another one of these parallel, it's more like a package, but it's a different model of parallel computing. And then on the right there is listed HP Java, which is High Performance Java. Java is the new language, object-oriented language that is in wide use for web applications. HTML, of course, for formatting pages, and VRML we discussed. So that was a little bit of an overview of computational science. And next I'll go to talking just some basic information about who's going to be working with the course and what the structure of the course will be. So on this page we have the primary instructor is Jeffrey Fox that I mentioned. He, his background is in physics and computer science, and here's some contact information for him. And he does travel quite a bit, meetings and conferences. So when he's gone, I will be the primary backup lecturer. That's me, Nancy McCracken, and my contact information. My background is primarily in computer science. Now there is a person which unfortunately we didn't get listed on here, the instructor from Jackson, who will be there. Unfortunately, he had to be away this week, too, at a workshop. So lots of people are traveling this week. And that's Professor Mitra, Debas Mitra. So he will be your main local contact there for the course. He will be there, and he can, of course, you can contact us. We're expecting you to send questions by email whenever you have a problem. But Professor Mitra will be there locally to also help you out. Then here's some other administrative contacts, Nicole Casa. Then there are two email aliases that are going to be available. One of them is the administrative alias, and it will include the instructors and the TA and administrative support. And the slide says it's going to be called CPS615AD, but I'm not entirely sure of that, so I will check on that and make sure of that before next time. Then there will be another alias that has all the students on it. So, for example, if you want to send a question to all the students, or if I want to send a notice to all the students that says your new homework assignment is ready, or something like that, there will be an email alias where we can email to everyone in the course. Now, all the course information is going to be available primarily through a set of web pages that are linked to the main class web page, and here is the URL for that main class web page. http://www.npac.syr.edu/projects/jsu/fall98. Now, there will also eventually be a copy of this downloaded to your server. There will be a local URL as well, so that you can get faster access to some of the materials that you might be using for doing your homework. But there will always be this sort of master copy at NPAC. And at the end of this lecture, we will be going over the class webpage so that you can see what it's like. Now, the people listening at NPAC say they can't hear me anymore. Can you guys at Jackson hear me? Oh, okay. Only one person can't hear me. And it's Roman. Okay, so let's talk some more about how the course is going to be organized. The main work of the course will be some homework problems and a small project at the end. So at the beginning of the course, there will be some shorter, say, 1 week homeworks in which you investigate a particular topic on the web or do a write-up of some particular topic, but we will, as soon as possible, 2 to 3 weeks, get into the programming side of this course and start giving programming problems. They will probably more likely be two-week assignments so that you'll have time to do the programming, and we're anticipating there will be maybe on the order of 8 of these homework sets. So there will be a small project at the end. We're anticipating counting 70% for homework, 30% for the project of your final grade. Note that there is not an exam for this course. So in some sense, the final project takes the place of the exam. Now, the main language that we're going to use is the Message Passing Interface, MPI, and you can use that with either Fortran or C, or Java, actually. And we thought we'd start with Fortran or C, and at the end of this class, we're going to have a little questionnaire for you to fill out so that we can check on your programming background and see what languages you know. And in particular, if there are people who don't know either Fortran or C or C++, we want to be alerted of that fact. Now, all your homework will be submitted through the web. We'll put the homework assignments on the web page, and then you will prepare your own web page, and we'll give you a web directory to put it in, where you can write up your homework and put your programming examples for us to look at and grade. The how you will actually do the programming is that we have a what we call a virtual programming lab, or VPL, which you can access through your web pages at the lab at Jackson, and it enables you to submit programs to the NPAC machines. I mean, you can write your programs, compile them, submit them, and they'll be run on a parallel computer here at NPAC. Now, another topic that's not listed here is the prerequisites for the course, but the prerequisites do include that you should have some amount of computer programming. We're hoping that it's Fortran or C or C++, although we didn't specify that. And some math background. We would like at least a small amount of linear algebra, and maybe some calculus, we didn't require numerical analysis. There will be some numerical analysis used in the course, but it will be discussed as we go along. We wanted to design the course so that people could take this course before they took a numerical analysis, or vice versa, that the order was not important. So now let me talk a little bit about the material covered in the course. On this slide are listed a lot of the introductory topics that are going to be covered this first week in this first lecture. We'll talk about high-performance computing and computation, which is abbreviated HPCC, how it's playing out as a national program and on the national scene. We already talked a little bit about what is computational science. We will talk more about the technology driving this whole development of computational science. And then we'll start talking about, you know, what is parallel computing. There's an example that we have based in this lecture based on an example of parallel computing that it might be found in society. That is, how would you coordinate a bunch of people building a wall in parallel? We'll also talk some more about computer architectures and compare it with the World Wide Web and parallel systems. The next module in the course will be a further discussion of parallel computing using a base example of solving Laplace's equation. And it will illustrate parallel computing, also the use of the web. This is where we'll get our main concepts of parallel computing in the course. Then the remainder of the course will consist of a set of modules in which we discuss algorithms from various scientific applications, and what kind of computational techniques are needed. And I have the following slide discusses what those many applications might be, so I'll leave that for the moment. Then there will be a set of modules that talks about the software and the kinds of programming models that you need to do these computational techniques. So the first that we will discuss is this using the package MPI for message passing interface. It's the so-called SPMD model, single program, multiple data. We'll discuss what that means. We'll also discuss the data parallel model with HPF and Fortran 90 languages, but we won't be using them in the labs. We won't have time to use every language. And we'll also try to do some use of Java for visualization. We'll have other tools. I should ask you, I should warn you not to try all of the canned responses on the chat, because a lot of them are quite noisy. I'll give you time after the lecture to play some more for the chat. So right now, let's not use those. Maybe you can't hear them, but I can. Okay. So we will also discuss other things such as collaboration and performance tools. Now, a lot of the meat of the course is in going through a set of what we might call vignettes or mini applications. They are small problems that are the core of many scientific applications. For example, there are many scientific applications in which, in order to solve your problem, you have to solve a set of partial differential equations. Now, if we were going to study a real application that was solving partial differential equations, I suppose it was some computational fluid dynamics system which was supposed to predict weather or simulate the flow of air over an airplane wing, then there would be quite a complex set of partial differential equations that would need to be solved. These systems typically have a couple dozen fairly complex equations. But in order to see the techniques, we want to reduce that complexity and just solve a system which has one partial differential equation. The technique is the same as solving 24 partial differential equations, essentially, the computational techniques, so that we can isolate and concentrate on the computational techniques. So that will be true for all of these topics. We will go over problems in which need to solve ordinary differential equations, or ODEs. An example of this is what people call the n-body problem, which might be the bodies might be stars in an astrophysics application, or they might be particles in a chemical application. There are some problems that need to solve numerical integration. We also need to give a small discussion of floating point arithmetic and how it might affect these computations. There are other applications which are based on what are called the Monte Carlo methods. And Monte Carlo methods always involve some aspect of randomness in order to do the simulation or computation. So we also have to discuss generation of random numbers. There are other applications, such as electromagnetism or chemistry, in which you might be doing things like solving sets of linear equations. And for that, we need to discuss the treatment of matrix algebra. And finally, at the end, we mention the PDEs, the partial differential equations. So for all of these topics, we will give some discussion of the underlying mathematics, the underlying numerical methods. Then we will go primarily to discussing the computational techniques of how you would do this in a high-performance computing way. So that concludes the discussion of how the course is going to be run and what is the content. Maybe I should pause for a minute to see if there are any questions about that right now, about how the course is run or what's going to be in it, what your background should be. Okay. Well, the next slide has, that I've brought up here, lists some of the kinds of scientific applications that we are, that we may be studying. And I've mentioned some of them, like modeling airflow around an aircraft. I should point out that one of the issues here is that with former levels of computational power, an aircraft company could realistically simulate airflow around, for example, a single airplane wing, but they needed the new parallel computers that are approaching speeds of up to a terabyte in order to simulate the airflow of an entire airplane. So that's the kind of computing power that people are needing in their applications. So there are other large-scale simulations listed here, weather forecasting. Reservoir simulation is a big one in places like Texas. Oil reservoirs are, of course, are where oil resides underground, and you want to find out what will simulate before you tackle the oil reservoir. Things like will the oil come out if you pump water in, or I don't know quite all the issues. This isn't my area, but you can see that it's important to the oil industry. There's another whole class of what we might call more academic problems in physics, chemistry, and biology, where in addition to traditionally a lot of the research in these areas used both making theories about how the world worked, and experiment in order to verify how the world worked and how whether the theories were true. And nowadays, computing is a sort of the third arm of that, that you can do simulations to try to verify if your theory is correct. And finally, listed here is our other critical real-world applications, things like data mining, which is looking for patterns of information in large collections of information. For example, you might be looking for credit card fraud in a commercial application, not a scientific one. And financial companies need to model various kinds of financial behavior. In fact, one of the sort of new things in high-performance computing has been the ability of using Monte Carlo techniques to do simulations for Wall Street. So actually there's a connection there between people who study physics and know about Monte Carlo techniques and the ability to be able to do financial simulations. Well, I see by the time that I had better, before I start this next session about peak performance of supercomputers, that I had better stop and go over the class webpage and give you a chance to fill out the survey and the registration form. So we will have an abbreviated lecture today. We will continue in order to do these administrative things, and we'll continue with this lecture next time when Jeffrey Fox is here. So the comment is the graph is not clear. Yes, I know you can't read them. On the next page, I think you can read them better. And also, I can blow them up so that you can, when we talk about this next time, so that you can read them better, or when Jeffrey talks about them. Okay, now I'm going to switch gears here and go to the class webpage. So I need to type in the URL. So this is the class webpage that we started for the course Computational Science for Simulation Applications. And this course probably has a Jackson number as well, and I don't have that on here yet. I'll find that out. So this page will be developed as we go along. Now I'm going to click on some things and show you some things, and then when we get down to the registration form, I'll have you take over and type in some things. So under the on the left-hand side, there's a menu. Home is the page that we're at now. I'm going to click on the information link. Don't click on stuff now, but because I'm in control here. But later you can go to this page. In fact, you'll be going to this page many times throughout the semester and checking for assignments and things like that. So under the information link, I put some of this information about the course. Now I think that if you want to look at this, you need to scroll down yourself. There's a scroll bar on the right hand side. Notice that here is the URL of the web page. Again, the contact information for the instructors and the TAs, and for Mike Robinson as the lab assistant. The information about the coursework, and I put a section on academic dishonesty. I guess I should state it more positively, a section on academic honesty, that it's part of, you know, the graduate experience for you to discuss things with each other and to work from existing examples. And we certainly encourage you to do so, but in the end we want you to write up your own work and to give proper credit to what things you've used from other people. The second link I'm going to click on is the syllabus. And again, that gives information that I went over in the lecture slides you can scroll down a little bit and see that it lists the kinds of topics that we'll be going over. Note that I have listed a set of modules, like I did on the slides, that talk about different programming models and software. And then there's a set of modules that talks about algorithms in different scientific applications, such as solving ODEs and PDEs. And they're not necessarily listed in the order that we will cover them in class, because we will intersperse talks on scientific applications with talks on software and throughout the course, so that we introduce the software topics as we need them. Now I'm going to click on the link called Lectures, and you'll see that I've put up there on this page a link to the first lecture. It's called Introduction, the Course, Driving Technology, High Performance Computing Communications, and so on. So later, if you want to go and look at the slides that I just went over, they are here, and you can go and look at them. And of course, as time goes by, we'll keep adding links to the lectures as we do them. Now I have a link called Resources that I'm going to click on. And this is a page that has links to various secondary sources of information. Let me click on one of them, online books and general resources. There are some books about computational science, about building parallel programs, which are online, and you can go and read topics in those books. So in general, this resources page has our collection of links to stuff that we've gone out and looked for on the web, and in addition to stuff that we've done ourselves. You can scroll down there and see that we have links for all the different sort of scientific algorithm topics and the software technology topics, including ones that we won't cover in the course. This has more information. Now, if I were to click on the link called Assignments, there wouldn't be anything there, but in the future, that's where we'll put the assignments that we make, and you can go and look there. Now I'm going to click on the link called Students. And again, in the future, there will be more here. There will be links to send email to other students and links for looking at student web pages. But for now, there's just this one link called Registration for Computer Accounts and the Background Survey. And I want all of you, I'm going to stop clicking now and leave this page alone. So I think that for you now, this will just work like a web page, and that you should now, I will stop talking, and you can click on this link and get up a page in which you are going to register for your computer account and fill in this little background survey about what languages you know and stuff like that, whether you know how to write HTML. Now, I'm not sure. I think you'll get up also a little dialog box about accepting a certificate. Note that right now all you're doing is registering for the course or for your computer account, but in the future this will be the same server that you can go and look at your grades and do other sensitive information. So this is stored on a secure server in a database. And every time you connect to this server, you need to accept this certificate, and it will make a secure transaction. So is that happening? Oh, if you get up a page that asks you to select the course, select JSU Fall 98. I got a chat. You got a message that said the server received bad information. Not quite sure how to check this out because it's different for me. I'm going to try to check this out if I can. Did you get this bad data? Did you get up the certificate dialog box? When you get up, it says certificate name check, and you say continue. And that's when you get the message about bad data? Right, you keep clicking next in many windows. And at the end, that's when you get the message about bad data. Well, I don't get that from here. I click on the certificate, and I get through to the page where I select the course. Oh, do you think it's because they're doing it in the shared browser? Well, do you have another, if you have another browser window, somebody try this. I'll send you a message. Here's what to type. I'm typing it in. This is why I didn't want you to have to type this. It takes a while. You have to scroll that over and see it or resize it. Can you find another browser window on your desktop there? Not the shared browser, but, for example, the one where you started Tango. You tried it in a different browser window. You typed in this URL, and it still gets the same error. Okay, well, that's all the ideas I have, unless Roman has another idea. We did this the last two semesters, so it's not like we haven't done it before. Okay, same error with the new browser. Okay, but I'd really like to collect from you your email addresses. So what I suggest you do is that you should type your name and email address into the chat, and as they come in, I'll write them down so that I have them, and then I can send you email about what these URLs are.